So I think we're going to get started. Crushing turnout here on the last day. It's really sad to see the whole crew depart. Can't make it started. We better leave now. Are you ready to start? Okay. So I don't know if any of you were here for the Sakai 3 demo that we just did at 8 o'clock. We'll have some screencasts up. Oops. We're going to talk about the process at NYU that led us to get into the Sakai 3 work. So I'm Lucy Appert, and I'm here with my colleague, Bob Scalacci. We teach in the Liberal Studies program at NYU, which is about a 2,000, maybe 2,300 student program. We have a two-year program, which is a core curriculum, and we have a four-year program with a BA in Global Liberal Studies. So we're interdisciplinary, and that probably has influenced our outlook a little bit. So we started to talk about moving into developing Sakai 3. I think we started from two philosophical tenets before we even knew there was a Sakai 3. One was that technology shapes the way we think as much as it reflects them. Often you think of technologies as kind of extension of people, right? I need to do something, and so I make the technology over into the way I need to do things, paving cow paths, I think that's what that's called. But in fact, what begins to happen is that for the first person, maybe, or the first group of people, the technology kind of manifests as something that I need to use. But over time, people begin to shape their practices according to what the technology allows them to do or doesn't allow them to do. So the technology itself begins to send a message. And one thing we talked about in the previous presentation is, and that we're very interested in as teachers, is the message that we're sending to students through our technology. So the metaphor of an LMS is a set of discrete courses, and they're not connected or interrelated. And the message to students then is that everything you're doing in your education is discrete and not related. And the other metaphor that you get from this environment is that what happens inside of this course site doesn't go anywhere. So if you are requiring students to, let's say, do a discussion board or post things, what they understand from this is busy work, because I'll never get anything out of this. It'll go into this course shell, and then when this professor is done with it, it will be, you know, gotten rid of, right? And I don't own any of that stuff. So the technology really has begun to shape a set of expectations from students just because the end of it that we got, from the development end of it, was based on assessment and based on management. So I think the biggest word in LMS is management, right? And so what we have right now dominating standard educational technology is an extremely hierarchical system, right? And so faculty members, one reason they don't like it is because they actually aren't even the top of the hierarchy, right? They're administrators who create the possibilities of their environment. And then faculty members have a little more power, right? They can customize the environment. And then if you're a student, you have basically no power in that environment, right? So that's another message, another way we're shaping the student experience by what we have, right? Which is that you're not empowered. So one of the things we want to investigate then in this presentation is how embarking on a collaborative project has made a better collaborative tool. Another kind of subtenant that we've come into this process with is the idea that academic communities cohere around content. So one word we use when we talk about the Sakai 3, Sakai OAE product, as well as the Sakai 3 project at NYU, is we talk a lot about academic networking and how that's different from social networking, and how it's different maybe from what the idea of professional networking has been created. So we're kind of moving between the pillars of, say, LinkedIn and Facebook. And what students will say to us is, we know how to do Facebook, but we don't know how to do LinkedIn, right? And so we need to provide them a space where they begin to understand and distill out this idea of a professional expression. But also, we believe that academic communities have do a special kind of networking, where the way that we talk to each other and the ways that our ideas come together are really rooted in content and the ability to share content and comment on content. So if you look at both of those pillars of Facebook or LinkedIn, there's a very light on the amount of content that you can put in and the amount of content that you can share. So another tenet we've had is that building a network for an academic community is necessarily different. So if we look at NYU itself, we are a very siloed institution. You can see that for how students apply. Students apply to a particular school, and they get into that school, and it's very difficult to move around between schools. We have 5 music programs. And
at last count.
At last count, we might have more, right? And a lot of this is the product of the left hand not even knowing that there is a right hand, right? Not even knowing what the right hand is doing. There's not even a sense of that. So the question at NYU was, how do we, especially now where we have 12 global sites, we have a site in Abu Dhabi and a site in Shanghai where students are entering and may spend the majority of their academic careers. We have the other global sites where students will pass in and out. Our students in our program can begin their freshman year abroad, and then they are required to spend their junior year abroad. So maybe half of their time at NYU is not spent at Washington Square. So how do we transcend these silos to help everyone feel like they are connected and part of the NYU community? This becomes an issue when you start to talk about building software, because every school has its own budget, and they have their own set of needs. We need to do X, we need to do Y. And the thing that we began to realize when we brought our group together is that if we continued to work like this, we would not be getting the benefit of being the larger NYU community, because the law school would just build something where the people in the law school were still talking to people in the law school, right? And the Wagner School of Public Service would just build something where people in the Wagner School of Public Service were only talking to each other. So what we needed was a solution that would transcend all of these areas. So what we needed to do was to come together and pool our resources. So you can see our group, our working group, was formed by a core group of us. So our liberal studies program, the College of Nursing, and the Gallatin School of Individualized Study, which by definition has to hop silos because it's the school that was created for people to take classes in all the other schools. So their students need appointment exchange. These 3 schools came together, and we put in $50,000 each, and we went to David Ackerman, who's in the back and head of ITS, and said, we want to do this thing. And he said, great, I'll match your money, I'll give you project management, and let's try to do this together. And so as we began to work together to figure out what our common needs were, we found out that a network would meet the majority of our needs better than a set of boutique tools, and that ITS, our central technology place, was the best place to house all of these things. So this is what it came together that we needed. And I should go back and say, after our original core, we were joined by the Faculty of Arts and Sciences, by NYU Abu Dhabi, by the Wagner School of Public Service, by the Medical School, and by the Steinhardt School of Cultural Education and Human Development. So other schools heard about the project and wanted to join in as well, bringing funding with them. So what we found out was we needed a network that transcended the silos so that students in Gallatin could find out about courses in our program that they could take. Right, or that these people in the 5 different music programs could be able to compare which music program would be the best. All of our members needed a portfolio that would last from admission to alumnus status. And as I said in our last presentation, if you get 5 people in a room about portfolio, you'll have 7 different ideas of portfolio, right? So a lot of time, the portfolio is the rocks on which coalitions break, right? And so what we needed was a tool that would address a lot of these different portfolio needs, and Bob is going to talk about this as well. And we wanted to do something that I began to touch on a minute ago called technology mentoring for students, which means that the ivory tower has pretty much been an ivory tower, and we've been able to ignore the world, right, and ignore this. We dabble in it ourselves, but we don't bring into the classroom, right, or we don't bring into students' experience the fact that they're inhabiting an online world, which is changing a lot of the rules of how you do scholarship, of how you do research, of how you even compose and the kinds of things that you grade as assignments. So what we needed to do for students then is we needed to begin to help them navigate this world and to begin to address this world. So one of the examples was we need to help them begin to create a responsible online profile for themselves, because they understood that if they did bad things online, this would be held against them, right? But they didn't really understand how they could do good things online, how they could begin to build a presence. We also felt that they would be asked in their careers to do things with technology that we weren't providing any kind of training at all, or they might get kind of haphazard training. And they also, on a daily basis, were going out and uncritically inhabiting a world with a lot of problematic information, and we need to be able to bring that in as well. We also wanted a pedagogically sound environment, an environment that, as I was saying earlier, sent messages to students that what they were doing was worthwhile, that they weren't just doing busy work for us, that everything was connected. We wanted the technology to reflect our academic mission. And finally, we wanted integration of services, so that when we agreed to disagree about what the perfect portfolio was, I could put mine in and they could put theirs in, right? Or that because I had the perfect advising tool for the College of Nursing, I could integrate that, but they had a different advising tool because they do something very different in the business school, and they could put that in as well. So we didn't want to all have to have consensus, which meant that everybody had to compromise and have something they didn't like. Rather, everyone could have the thing they liked integrated into a common environment. So these were the needs that we realized we had. And from these needs, then, the NYU project was born. And what we'll do is we'll kind of drill down into how this project worked out on the NYU level and how it phased into a community project. And we see this developing into the project itself. So I'll turn it over to Bob.
Thank you. One of the areas, perhaps the area where we most changed our original thinking based on the collaboration that we became part of, had to do, as Lucy was saying, with portfolios. We had initially conceived of a portfolio as a kind of private pedagogical tool between instructor and student, and the interaction would primarily be between instructor and student. We've spent a great deal of time talking about how any kind of instructor comments needed to be absolutely private, and the students' workspace would only be open to themselves and their instructors. And as part of our discussions then with the other groups and their concept of portfolios, we realized the extent to which the network paradigm is part of a very large social shift having to do with where the division between public and private lies. This is something that's really in the midst of a major renegotiation. As we were saying earlier, technology shapes our thinking. When technology only allowed people to have a unique copy of a book that they put on their shelves, they knew that their relationship with that book was completely private. If a piece of text that you've written is out on the web, you may not feel how public it is because you are not aware of what audience is interacting with it. But the effect can, through the network of the web, can influence people with whom you're not even in contact, and things come back to you that quite surprise you. You've probably all heard stories of people who posted a photo that became a meme, and they had no idea that anyone other than the two or three people to whom they originally sent it had ever had access to it. This was our original portfolio concept, and it's very much keyed to a humanities great works program. It's something we call the Memory Palace, and what it gives students, this is the way it looked in, oh no, this is the Sky 3 version, yeah. What it does is it gives students a set of differentiated spaces in the form of a floor plan. A floor plan is something that people automatically understand, that you have different kinds of functions that different rooms perform. At least students who grew up in Western circumstances, that may not necessarily be the case in Japan, where rooms are divided by paper screens and that can be shifted around to change configurations for different purposes. What we wanted to see through this, rather than giving students a taxonomy into which they, a predetermined taxonomy into which they loaded their material, we wanted to see how they conceived the relationships between the various kinds of work that they did by examining what categorization they would place upon it. And by putting it in this floor plan shape, even without giving students any information or any pointers about what kinds of rooms might include what kinds of stuff, we found that students tended to put the things they cared about the most in the larger, more central rooms, and the things they cared about the least in the more peripheral rooms. So it was always, it became easy to see at a glance the kind of attitudes that students had towards their various facets of their education, what were their leading interests, simply by looking at how they had laid out the portfolio. This is a good portfolio for a program like ours, and it's where our thinking started. If it had ended there, we would have had a little boutique tool that was only used by liberal studies and no one else would ever be interested in or care about unless they were one of the handful of similar Great Works programs around the country. And maybe St. John's in Annapolis would be interested in something like this. As we got into the room and talked to the other constituents in the SOG, we realized how various their portfolio needs were. Gallatin was looking for a tool that would not only allow a student to aggregate their own work, but also to contact other students so that they could see how they had aggregated work. If every student in a group or in a school is putting together an individual major, they need to be able to get some sense of how other students are doing it so they have some models, some pointers, some guidelines. In particular, the Gallatin need was related to a senior project. So they wanted a portfolio that was not tied into any individual course, but that students accumulated over the full career so that by the time they got to senior year, they would be able to do a senior colloquium that was well informed by all they had studied in the past and wasn't a kind of a one-off, a project on its own that didn't develop any of their thinking from earlier in the in their careers. So in some ways, Gallatin's needs were the closest to ours initially, but with that important difference that they did want students to have some ability to make contact with each other based on materials in their portfolio, perhaps things that were tagged that other students could then find. Now, how many people have been talking about public health in their portfolios? Wagner is the School of Public Service. It's a graduate program at NYU, and its concept of the portfolio diverged the most from our initial perspective. They were really thinking of the portfolio as the means for networking. You represent yourself so that other people can find you meaningfully and have meaningful contact with you. This, I think, is another part of a more general paradigm shift. It used to be that knowing led to sharing. Now often sharing leads to knowing. You knew people, you shared things with them. Now you tend to share things, and that's how you come to know who people are. So this was a mock-up developed by the company IDEO. IDEO. I always, my Italian background, it sounds like it should be IDEO to me, but So IDEO developed this mock-up of what Wagner wanted in a portfolio page, and this includes some of the kinds of aggregating, accumulating of a student's best work that other sorts of assessment-driven portfolios include. But the point is to use those pieces of work to make contact with other people, to represent yourself. The College of Nursing had a kind of hybrid idea where the portfolio would be a segment of a networking page. But they also have very special assessment needs. They need a portfolio that's very flexible in that the proficiencies that are mandated by the state are subject to change whenever the state decides that they should be different. So they didn't want to lock in to an OSP-style matrix-driven portfolio that would be very hard to alter and would tell a student, you're doing this piece of work to meet this particular assessment, put it in this box. They wanted to be able to draw from all of the students' work, again looking at tags, to see what they had done that might meet a particular proficiency. Again, the important thing, I think that the most important thing that we learned through the network that we were part of is that what we had been thinking of as a private individual enterprise, students creating of a portfolio, is intimately tied to the creation of a public identity through a network. This, both our process and the products that we're helping to create then became models, I think, for a larger community, where a portfolio community more or less spontaneously coalesced, including all of these institutions, to give the SCI community designers some sense of what the various user needs for a portfolio are. I hope that we're going in the direction where rather than creating a discrete portfolio tool that does only one thing based on the needs of one or even a handful of institutions, we're creating ways to concatenate a number of different functionalities in order to achieve the different goals that people have for portfolios, which include everything from very private, sort of HIPAA-guarded information shared only between an individual student and the person who needs to assess whether they have met a proficiency, to very, very open pieces of information that students use to say, this is who I am. Are you doing something similar? Let's talk. Let's share content. Let's share information. So this group is offering advice and feedback to the SCI community. We're talking to each other on a weekly basis in not only a large group but various subgroups to try to get some clarity on the range of needs that people have for portfolios. And we're finding in this group as well that many portfolio concepts are far more intimately tied to networking than we would have guessed, and we wouldn't have found that out if the development weren't being undertaken at a networked level. These are the guiding principles with which we started the SCI-ALEX working group, and they were derived by discussion between all of the member parties. The most important one, I think, for the purpose of what we're talking about today is the very first one, shape and guide academic community members in a non-authoritative style. We think network decision-making is very different from committee decision-making. We're not always looking for consensus. We're looking for solutions that will fit, not consensus about what the needs are, but solutions that will fit everybody's needs. Lucy, do you want to take it back from this point?
So I think one thing just to finish up on this set of principles is that we started working from principles rather than, let's say, requirements. We got to requirements, but instead of saying, okay, you need X, let me write this down and build you X, instead we wanted to look at this, instead of coming from an individual framework, we wanted to establish a community framework that we could evaluate things against. And this has been how the Sakai community has begun to work as well, and working on Sakai 3. So I chair a group called the User Reference Group for Sakai 3, and it's made up of representatives from all of the involved institutions. And then within our institutions, we have seated groups of users, of academics, of academic technology administrators who look at the designs for Sakai 3 rather than feeding up a set of requirements, rather a set of, we have a process that's led by mini specs. So that is kind of a thinking from conversations, writing out what something should be, what something should not be, what qualities it should have. Then we have designs from that, and then we put both the mini specs and the designs through a set of seated user panels who take a look and give feedback. And it's interesting because then everyone comes together collaboratively to discuss how this is meeting the group's needs, right? So even on an institutional level, we're not tied to I need X, I need Y, but an evaluation of a set of designs. So it's a different way of working, and it's produced very good results. It's produced a different kind of tool. How does it actually begin to work on the ground in terms of software? One thing is that what we realized at NYU is that we needed something like Sakai 3 that would give people access to multiple repositories so that people were not tied down to one place. They could feed in the kinds of things. This goes back to the need for integration. So Atlas Network is our Sakai 3 pilot, which is going to kick in on November 2nd. Underpinning that, where people are keeping their content that they can move around, they're keeping it in Apache Jackrabbit, they're keeping it in Zythos, and we have Kaltura Video that will be integrated, iTunes U that will be integrated, Echo 360 from our Open Ed initiative. So we have a lot of different repositories feeding in rather than the system itself dictating where stuff goes and what format it's in. So that's one way you begin to collaborate, is that you build an integration to a lot of different kinds of repositories. We also wanted this network not to dictate kind of what the groups were and how people interacted, but we wanted it to be one of a set of services offered at NYU that different groups would take advantage of. So we have in addition to our Sakai 3 project, we have underpinning it a grouper project. So grouper software where you can create stable groups in the university and then populate lots of different services like Sakai 3, where you would have a course group. But this course group might also have a set of common materials in Zythos. It might also have something in DSpace, which underpins a library archive we have, so that you could get the sense of this network being part of a bigger network. Finally, we had an idea, the idea of a master aggregator tagging tool that would not be integrated into the system, but rather on top of, not be internal to the system, but rather riding on top of it. And this works in two directions. First of all, it's a way of integrating through tagging a lot of these different systems so that it would read a set of tags from within Sakai, but also from library databases, from other places, and be our master aggregator. It also is a place where you can begin to rethink assessment. Most instructional technology begins from assessment. That's one of the things that ties people down with portfolios. And so if you're thinking from assessment, you're doing a couple of things intellectually. Number one is you're kind of determining what your results are going to be. You're only going to be able to look for X. It also means that you're constantly building around something that's always shifting. In the case of nursing, they didn't want to go to a portfolio where you build a matrix around a set of state requirements because they had seen cases where in 4 years the requirements had changed six times. You'd have to rebuild the software over and over again. From a teaching standpoint, what we found is that from our own experience and from other faculty members' experience is that you can get a lot more information about how students are doing, not from the assignments, but in watching their interactions, the kinds of things that social networking has opened up. So, for example, we have courses that reveal statistics in our LMS to kind of show students how often people are accessing things, what percentage of students are looking at things. If you're teaching people how to teach, right, you can look at what effective prompts are and what ineffective prompts are. But also, if I want to look at a particular student's performance, I want to know how many blog posts you've done. I want to kind of look at all of your discussion posts. I want something that allows me to look at you and how you're behaving rather than a single performance that you're giving me, right? So tagging is another way, a flexible way. If you have a lot of different things tagged, experiential learning, a lot of different things tagged, you know, like demonstration of lab skills or whatever, and then you can pull these things together on flexible matrices, you can begin to get assessment that is more organic and can move with the different ways that you need to assess. So the idea of an external tagging tool is another idea we're pursuing. And a bigger vision for this is that if other people at other institutions are running an external tagging tool, another master aggregator, then we have the ability to do cross-institutional comparison as well, right? Because we're pulling things up from what we're doing, they're pulling things up from what they're doing. So finally, that brings us out into the final set of networks, the capacity for cross-institutional comparison and sharing. We talked about this a little bit in the previous presentation. Because of the coverage model in academia, most of the people that academics work with are colleagues at other institutions. My work is in Milton. They don't need three of us, three Milton specialists, right, in a particular program. So if I'm doing research and collaboration, I'm going to be working with someone, say, at Michigan or Berkeley, and trying to facilitate that need. A lot of scholarly research happens in Google Docs because you can't let people into your institution. It's very difficult for institutions that have particular collections that have a wide appeal, but you can't let people into the system. So the ability to begin to facilitate cross-institutional sharing and also to facilitate the exchange between professional groups and institutional groups, right? So the American Academy of Religion is one of the stakeholders in Sakai 3, putting up a portal for collaboration and exchange within that professional group. We have several members of the American Academy of Religion teaching in our program who are very excited about being in the same type of system and the same type of sharing. So beginning to set up a platform that would facilitate this cross-institutional sharing. You can only get here by having values of collaboration. You can only get here not by saying we're all going to sit here and compromise and make something that's like 50% of what everyone wants, but instead of throwing those ideas of we have to start from requirements out the window and instead starting from the idea of what are our common needs and what kind of loose system can we make. So the final thing I'll say, and any of you who were at this Sakai 3 presentation will remember this probably from that, is that what we believe is happening with Sakai 3, which is transitioning to being called Sakai OAE, Sakai Open Academic Environment, is what we have built is a loft structure. And if you think about the metaphor of a loft, you have a really solid structure. And within it, you can put up walls that look real and have the sense of being very real, but those walls don't alter the structure itself. And so customizations with widgets, with templates can give people different portfolio experiences. Integration can pull in commercial portfolio experiences, to go back to our example. But you have this common platform from which everyone starts with a set of tools that are integral to the system. And so we think that the result of all of this collaboration has been a platform that can facilitate more collaboration.
Appropriately, we're now, I think, beginning to realize this sort of vision that people like Edison had when they first began creating mechanical reproductions of
of artifacts, where there was no longer a unique artifact, but a reproducible image or a capture of that artifact. Edison never conceived the idea of mass media, where there'd be one source pushing out to millions of people a very controlled set of objects. He thought people would use recorders at home to record the voices of their grandparents so that they could be passed down to future generations, and that it would really be a kind of a democratic tool. And we're moving in that, realizing that that kind of vision where everybody is part of forming and contributing to this networked cultural experience.
In the spirit of collaboration, one of our collaborators from ITS, David Ackerman, is here, and I wonder if you want to add anything from the ITS perspective? No. He just did a demo of Sakai 3. He's exhausted. He's done. So I'll open it up to any questions anyone might have. Well, that's why it's external to it. That's why the tool itself, you can see, is external to the LMS, right? So it's a tool that pulls from multiple places in the institution. So, for example, one common need is that faculty want to look at a student. They want to see their admissions essay. They want to see maybe their SAT scores. Then they want to see, you know, their grades. Maybe they want to see some representative work from courses. And maybe, I don't know, like a transcript or something. All those come from different places. Those are all, and so in order to pull that thick view of a student together, you need something that's external to all of those systems. So Sakai 3 is one piece of that, but it's not where we're going to house everything. So in that sense, then, having it right above, so institutional customizations of Sakai 3 can feed into it, and really the system where people are learning and producing work is going to be the main place where you're going to be pulling out stuff for institutional comparison, but there will be other things you're going to want to pull in as well, retention data, whatever. So it's something that's above, so that integrating, so that cross-institutional integration would be on this thing that's above in every place rather than customized from within. Does that make a little more sense? I mean, we're still in the discussion and planning stages for this, but I mean that's the imagination, is that it's not fettered by these pulling down customizations that you need to have institutionally. So to keep that separate.
Thank everybody for coming, and enjoy what little is left of the conference, and I hope people get home safely, especially if they're going to the East Coast like we are.
Thanks.